appreciate the introduction, Bruce. I'm going to talk about two things, actually. One is the potential to improve ET with net radiometers, and the other is water stress estimates with IR radiometers. And before I go, I should just acknowledge that Bruce is one of my co-authors, as well as Steve Ebbett, who I think may have left the room. Rick Allen discussed this equation in depth, so I won't spend too much time on it, but the main weather drivers of ET are the available energy, the difference between net radiation and soil heat flux, the vapor pressure deficit, and then, of course, the aerodynamic resistance. And one of the main inputs there is wind. And actually, I should say my equation is written in terms of conductance rather than resistance, but just the inverse. So net radiation has the potential to be a major input, especially where we encounter full canopy cover, which is typically the case in agriculture because you don't have a lot of available energy going to soil heat flux. So I just want to flash up real quick a statement from a recent publication. You can read it, but essentially it indicates that net radiation is the meteorological variable that has the greatest influence on ET and can potentially cause significant errors in ET estimates if net radiation isn't measured or estimated accurately. So earlier, Robert Lascano talked about the influence of humidity measurements on ET, and so this plot is an attempt to show very basically the influence of net radiation measurements on ET or net radiation estimates. So all you see is the change in ET as calculated with the Penman-Monteith equation on the y-axis as a function of change in net radiation on the x-axis. And I just used what I considered some generic conditions, air temp at 25, RH at 40%, and wind speed at 2 meters per second. And this shows that there's a near one-to-one relationship between net radiation and ET. So just by way of example, if we have approximately 10% error in ET, it can cause a pretty significant, with this line, 7 to 8% error in ET. Of course, the slope can change depending on conditions. So as the wind speed gets lower, or the VPD gets lower, the slope gets steeper. Wind speed gets higher, or VPD gets higher, then the slope gets a bit flatter. So these gray lines are my attempt to show approximately where the line would fall. So this statement comes from the American Society of Civil Engineers Standardized Reference ET Manual. And essentially it says that net radiation is very challenging to measure because net radiometers can be challenging to work with. Therefore, net radiation is typically predicted with measurements of solar, air temp, and humidity. And it indicates that the prediction routine is typically highly accurate. So just to show you real quick, here's the equations that go into net radiation estimation using the standardized reference ET equation. So RN, net radiation, is the sum of net shortwave and net longwave, and it's calculated by measuring shortwave and then assuming a value of albedo. Net longwave relies on measurements of vapor pressure, air temperature, and again, there's this cloudiness function, the equation at the bottom, that relies on measured solar, and then a predicted value of clear sky solar. We measure shortwave, constant albedo, and then we measure air temperature, humidity, and shortwave, and calculate the clear sky solar and predict longwave. So my purposes for this part of the talk are twofold: to determine the accuracy of the net radiation submodel in the ASCE reference ET equation, and then determine the impact on measured and modeled ET. Much of the data that I will show you has already been published in a 2010 publication listed here, but we've also collected some recent data as well. So the original study we did, actually our goal wasn't to accomplish the purposes I just listed. It was to compare the performance of different net radiometer models that were available, and I've listed them all here. So we deployed a whole bunch of radiometers over a turf grass surface at a research farm at Utah State University and made measurements during the summer. We had a good mix of clear and cloudy conditions, and it was always well-watered turf. What we found is that these four-component net radiometers that I've highlighted here As long as the individual sensors on each radiometer is accurately calibrated, they do a really good job of providing good measurements of net radiation. We compared the individual sensors on each radiometer to independent measurements of shortwave and longwave from reference pyranometers and purgeometers. So we just, as a follow-up to this study, we just took the average of the five four-component sensors that we have and used that as our reference net radiation by which we could compare the model to. And here are the results over turf grass. So the plot you're looking at is just the net radiation difference, the model minus our reference measurement, plotted as a function of the reference measurement. The red line marks the mean difference or the bias, and then you can see there in the table below we've also calculated the root mean square difference. So if we look at the bias in RMSD as percentages, net radiation was approximately 10% high using the model relative to our reference net radiation. When you plug those two numbers, the modeled net radiation and the measured net radiation, into the Penman-Monteith equation, not surprisingly, we get very similar pattern in the data, and the bias in RMSD are high, this time about 7 to 8%, just like the graph showed initially. So that was the 2010 data. This summer we've had an opportunity to make more measurements, this time over a full cover alfalfa canopy. Again, it's a uniform canopy, well watered. We've been making the measurements in the late summer and early fall. We get lots of different conditions in terms of sunlight and cloud cover. Here we don't have quite as many net radiometers. We have a single Kippen zone and four component, and then three Apogee instruments, four component net radiometers, and we just use the mean of them as a reference net radiation. And we've also verified the calibrations of these radiometers. And the alfalfa data looked very, very similar to the turf grass data we collected a few years previous. Again, on a percentage basis, bias and RMSD are about 10%-ish high, and that yields reference ET values that are about 7 to 8% high. So if we go back to where we started and we look at a 10% error, it gives us exactly what we expect. And again, the slope of the line can change, but ultimately, net radiation is a major driver of ET and can have a big impact on reference ET calculations. So now I'm going to shift gears just a little bit and talk a bit about infrared radiometers. It's a good follow-up to what Andy was just talking about. I think the theory is well known to all of us that decreased water uptake closes stomata, reduced stomata aperture reduces transpiration, and it causes the canopy temperature to increase because transpiration is a cooling process. So Dr. Mulla did a nice job of outlining the crop water stress index just a few presentations back. And this was developed in 1981 in Arizona. And so what I'm going to talk about is similar to the crop water stress index, but we're actually using canopy temperatures to estimate canopy conductances. So I won't go into the details here. I think Bill Kustis did a really nice job of summarizing two-source energy balance models. But what you're looking at is a figure of the surface energy balance when you have both plant and soil components. The equations shown on the right-hand side are only the core equations for the canopy energy balance, but you'd have a similar set for the soil energy balance. The point that I want to make here is one of the variables in all of this for the canopy energy balance is a canopy stomatal conductance term. And if you add the single measurement of canopy temperature to the standard weather variables that you get with a standard weather station, you can actually rearrange the equations and use the exact same two-source energy balance model that Bill described earlier, and you can estimate this canopy stomatal conductance term. So the second part of my talk, the purposes are to evaluate the response of stomatal conductance to rainfall and then compare actual and potential stomatal conductance values. So the original work was published back in 2009, but I'm going to show you some data that we have collected since then that works really well in corn. So I should say here that the actual stomatal conductance values, or what I'm calling actual, is the number from the previous set of equations that I just showed. And we're just using a simple leaf layer model for a canopy that's modeled as a sunlit and shaded layers, and then we're scaling it up to the entire canopy to calculate the potential values. So what we do is we compare actual values from the two source energy balance model to these scaled up leaf values as the potential. And here are the data. You're looking at about 2.5 weeks. The top graph is the conductance values, where the potential is shown in black and the actual is shown in green. And again, these are data from a cornfield near North Platte, Nebraska. So what you see is some of the time the actual matches the potential pretty well, and then there's other times when the actual value is well below the potential value. The lower graph is just the ratio of the two, so actual over potential. So a value near one would indicate they're fairly comparable. A value less than one would indicate the actual value was well below the potential value. The individual black points in the lower graph are half-hour averages, and then the green points are just the averages of the black points. So it would represent more of a whole day average. Here are the rainfall events. And what you see is the stomatal conductance that we're calculating from the two source energy balance responds as we would expect. Following rainfall events, it matches the potential values quite well. And then if you go a fair number of days after rainfall events, it tends to decline. So the stomata are closing in response to water use by the plants and water deficit in the soil. So I want to just show a bit more data. This is a one-to-one comparison with the potential value on the x-axis and the actual value on the y-axis. So the previous data I showed was just a roughly 2 to 3 week snapshot in the middle of the growing season. This shows data from the entire growing season when we look at the conductance values for days immediately after rainfall. And you can see we get what we would expect, a nice one-to-one comparison. There are a few outliers where our actual value overshoots our potential value a bit. The next plot shows what we get on the days immediately before rain, after the crop has gone several days without any water. And now we get actual values that don't match the potential values, and we get a slope that's well off the one-to-one line, just as we would expect. So we have the potential to improve water stress estimates. What I'm showing you, using IR thermometry, what I'm showing you here is on a single field scale, but previous speakers have shown much larger scale measurements using IR cameras and even satellites. The potential exists to do something like this on even bigger scales because the data, the only additional measurement that's required in addition to the standard MET variables is the surface temperature or canopy temperature. So my conclusions are pretty simple. I failed to mention earlier, but in addition to comparing the net radiation estimate from the ASCE standardized ET equation, we compared all of the different net radiometers to our reference net radiation measurement, and what we found is that all the net radiometers were more accurate than the RN model. And then, of course, the second half of the talk, you just saw the data, the canopy stomatal conductance estimates using IR temperature matched the model when the corn was well watered, and they declined as the corn used the water and corn became water stressed. Thank you for your time.
We'll take time for one question.
Yeah, sure, Bill.
So earlier was brought up about shaded sunlit leaves and where the measurements to make. So how much of an issue would that be in the case we do that?
So, of course, an IR radiometer, we're not using thermal cameras. We're just using a radiometer that gives you a single number that represents a composite temperature measurement of everything within the field of view. And we're not trying to separate sunlit from shaded leaves within that scene that the radiometer is viewing. We're attempting to separate soil and canopy contributions just like you do, but we don't attempt to separate sunlit and shaded. So we're assuming that that temperature, the canopy temperature, is representative of the whole canopy. And there may be cases where that's not a good assumption.